Hello and welcome to Talking.Golf on Wisconsin.Golf. Talking.Golf is a weekly podcast featuring Gary D'Amato and Rob Hernandez. And now, talking all things golf in Wisconsin, here's Gary and Rob. Talking.Golf is sponsored by Old Fashioned Golf. Our friends at Old Fashioned Golf are creating Wisconsin-inspired golf apparel right in Green Bay, Wisconsin. All of their gear is extremely comfortable, with one-of-a-kind designs that allow you to show your love for this great state, both on and off the golf course. And if you're like me, Rob Hernandez, you get texts like these from your oldest daughter. Do you have any special deals or treatment with Old Fashioned Golf? I love the I-43 towel and crew neck. Why? Because it's all about Wisconsin at Old Fashioned Golf. So check them out at oldfashionedgolf.com. Yes, Gary D'Amato, my life has been reduced to being the popular dad whose podcast is sponsored by Old Fashioned Golf. And Rachel has heard about it, and so she went on their website and saw what's going on there, and saw those, especially the crew necks and the I-43. I was just on there earlier today, and not only do they have the hooded version that Kyle Herzog was wearing when we did our video thing the other week, but they also, yeah, they do have the crew neck, just a regular old sweatshirt without the hood. And it's got the I-43 logo, the license plate logo, and all the little icons. And I tell you, it's nice to be liked for liking old-fashioned golf.
Well, that's not a bad thing to hang your hat on, Rob, is it?
No. And we should tell our listeners, too, Gary, that, you know, if you go to their website at oldfashionedgolf.com, they've been having deals throughout the holiday season. I don't see any up there right now, other than if you join their email list to receive updates and exclusive offers, you get 20% off your first order. So head on over to oldfashionedgolf.com and check them out here for the holiday season. And of course, check out our video that we did with Kyle that kind of went through the website and took a look and had the great history behind all the designs. You know, they didn't have any graphic design hit background, and they came up with all this. Pretty talented people over there at Old Fashioned Golf.
Yeah, that's amazing. Their stuff is really good. What I like about it, Rob, is the quality of the materials and how good it feels when you have it on. It's good stuff they make, and they should be proud of what they've done. And it's a growing business, and definitely we've got a connection with them that I hope goes on for a long time.
And I think I can safely bring back out the yellow version of the what is that one there? I hate it when I don't have the icon, the red icon. No, it's the one with the flag in Madison, and they've got a name for that too. Let me go to that. I've got to get this right. It bothers me. The polka state. That's it. The polka state.
Polka state.
Got the polka state with the yellow Wisconsin state and the green shirt, and I think we're recording our podcast here on a Monday morning. I think I'm safe to pull that out and wear it proudly after the Packers went over the Chiefs. So I think I made the right call with going green and gold this time.
You were wearing that shirt too when you did the podcast with Kyle, weren't you?
I was.
Yeah. Looked sharp. Look good, Rob.
Look good. Yes. I'm happy with that one, and happy with everything that we've got from Old Fashioned Golf. And you will be too if you have your golfer on the Secret Santa. You can't go wrong with something from Old Fashioned Golf. But Gary, we are into December, so it is, we are fully immersed in the Christmas season. And it's also qualifying school season. Last week we had three golfers at two different sites. The previous week, a couple different golfers at two sites. I think let's start with the good news first. We have a successful graduate to the final stage of PGA Tour qualifying school. I don't remember the last time we've had a Q school finalist. And now this is the first time we've had a PGA Tour Q school in a number of years because they had, you know, changed the format and became more of the qualifying for the Corn Ferry Tour. But Thomas Longbella of Chippewa Falls, former state amateur champion, rounds of 73, 71, 66, and 70 at Valencia Country Club in Valencia, California. And he finishes T2. Three shots behind Jeffrey Kang of Los Angeles, and he is off to the final stage of Q school. Pretty cool that Thomas Longbella is the guy to go on. He's got a great playing history. Obviously, he won the state AM. Was it at Monaco or Milwaukee Country Club?
That was at Milwaukee, won by 10 shots.
So, yeah, I can play.
Yes. Yeah. I was, what impressed me most about him getting through is, you know, he opened 73, 71, played good, but not great, and was outside the cut line going into the final two rounds. 19 players advanced out of his second stage qualifier. Mm-hmm. And he goes out and shoots 66 in the third round with all that pressure on him, on a player to try to get through. You know, you've got to shoot a number to move up the leaderboard. And knowing you have to do it with that kind of pressure and then doing it, I think is what really impressed me about Thomas, being able to dial in and get it done. I think he was maybe even par in the third round going under the ninth hole. He made an eagle and then he made five birdies on the back nine. He made a bogey on the back, on his back nine, but five birdies to shoot four under on the back for 66. And then you have to hold on to your spot, right? Because then he climbed into that top 19. Then you go into the final round and you've got to hold that spot. And there's pressure trying to do that too. And he shoots a pretty solid 270 and not only moves on, but, you know, comes close to winning the thing.
Yeah. And that 70, they started on a par five, it looked like. And, it starts with a birdie and then makes, seven pars and a bogey the rest of the way to turn in 36. But then the same place that he, you know, kind of made hay, you know, on the back nine, in the third round, you know, three birdies in his first four holes on the back. And he gets in a very comfortable, you know, range. One under was the mark to move on. And, he was seven clear of that. There aren't many times we've monitored Q schools for decades. And mm-hmm. I can't remember somebody having that level of comfort, to go on to a final stage of Q school. And as I said, I mean, we haven't had many, you know, golfers from Wisconsin get to that final stage and what probably maybe Jordan Niebrugge a few years ago. Maybe Charlie Danielson?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember if those guys even got to the final stage. I'd have to go back and look for sure. Second stage for those guys. I'm not sure they made it to the final stage.
Yeah.
We'll have to look that up. But yeah, but it's, you know, I watched him win that state amateur at Milwaukee Country Club in 2020, won by 10 shots. And, you know, he was a man among boys, so to speak, in that tournament. He was just head and shoulders better than everybody. He obviously has every bit of the game you need to go on to the next level and the level after that. But it's a matter of putting it together at the right time, and he did it. So hats off to Thomas.
The other thing that I liked was the fact that, you know, this year, you know, we kind of played a bit of a hodgepodge schedule, you know, played a lot up in Canada and did well there. But, you know, when he'd come back and you know, he was at Century World, is my mind right there? He played in the State Open.
Yeah,
we're gonna look at that. But I wanted to make, and I'll look that up.
Okay.
Is that he also came back to play in the Chippewa Valley Golf Association a couple of events back there, and you know, and the University of Minnesota guys have really taken to the CVGA, and maybe it's you know it's a thing where if any of our listeners are at that level in college where, you know, if you go to CVGA.com, they've got their website back up and running. You know, Angus Flanagan, a University of Minnesota golfer who I think is trying to get to where Thomas Longbella is as well, won the New Richmond Open on May 7th with a 64. So Ben Warrion, who I believe is a golfer, a 64 the next week at Mill Run in Eau Claire. And these aren't hard courses. And those two, then, you know, Ryan Isaacson, the former UW Eau Claire grad, shot a 66 to win at Wild Ridge. So, you know, the neat thing about this, and then, yeah, Thomas Longbella, August 13th. So in between the PGA Tour Canada, and then, you know, he went over to the DP World Tour qualifying. Thomas shoots a 64 at the Turtleback Open at Turtleback Golf Club in Rice Lake. And so, you're in that mindset of going low, which, I mean, you got to look at these scores. I mean, either you're going to go low and not make mistakes, or you're going to make mistakes and make two birdies for every mistake you made. And you can't afford to make more than three bogeys. So, you know, that means six birdies. You got to feel comfortable making birdies if you're going to get where you want to go. And it's neat to see guys kind of break through that, maybe that golf glass ceiling, Gary, of, you know, taking it to that scoring level that maybe, you know, when you were younger wasn't so comfortable, but now you're doing it week in, week out, day in, day out. And it's not such a weird thing to run off three or four birdies in a row.
Well, Rob, I think that's what separates the great players from the good ones is, you know, the good players get a couple under par and then start protecting. The great players get three or four under and want to get six or seven under. And when they get seven under, they want to get nine under. And I think that's a big separator, I think, at that level of golf. And Thomas doesn't have that fear of going low. Same thing back in the day with with Jordan Ibrugi and Charlie Danielson. Those guys just put up numbers. And that's what you have to do to get to the next level. You can't be afraid of when you get to two under, getting to five under. And Thomas does that.
And here's how far we've come with the State Open, Gary. Thomas Longbello was at Century World and Stevens Point, finished seventh. 71, boy, 72, boy. 71, 76. And then of course, we came back that last day for the, you know, the completion, I believe it was, but, where Cameron Huss, won. But, you know, again, there's another venue. I mean, you're playing a tough course like Century World ahead of the qualifying schools. What a treat. And and we're going to Minocqua Country Club next year. And of course, that was the scene of that great, playoff, that, decided the state amateur a few years ago, about 8-hole playoff. And, it was, state am that would never end. And, it's a great course up there. And, you know, again, I think the key to all this, Gary, is that, the five guys that we had at the second stage of Q School over 2 weeks, really, I think, benefited from, you know, the schedules they played coming up. And, I should mention too that at the other site, qualifying here at the Corn Ferry Tour Q School, that was in Valdosta, Georgia at Kinderlew Forest Golf Club. And, Hunter Eichhorn, finished T20. George Kneiser of Oconomowoc, Hunter, of course, the former Marquette golfer from the UP. George Kneiser from Oconomowoc, T30. George Kneiser was in the top five after a 71-68 start and had a really good front nine on his third round, and then started to slide a little bit, Gary. And he was one under through six holes in that third round, and then wound up shooting 73, closed with a 76 to fall out of the top 10. He fell 20 spots that final day. Hunter Eichhorn, for a while, Gary, when I first woke up on that final day there on Friday, Hunter Eichhorn and George Kneiser were both inside the top 13. Thomas Longbella had yet to start out in California, and it looked really good at that point. But, again, it's Q School. There's a lot of things that happen over the course of 4 hours.
Yeah, I felt bad for George. Got off that great 71-68 start. Just couldn't quite keep it going. And then Hunter Eichhorn was the opposite. Got off to a slow start, 73-76. Was tied for 56th and way outside the cut line to advance. And then put up that 67 in the third round to move up a bunch of spots. I think he moved up 30-some spots. And like you said, had a chance on that last day and just came up a couple shots short. I think he finished three shots out of what would have made it, I believe.
And I know you had it in the story. I mean, basically, now you almost have to get to the final stage to get status somewhere, right?
I believe so, yes.
So the top 25 in ties will be, the top five finishers in ties at the final stage will get to PGA Tour cards. The rest of the top 25 and ties will be exempt on the 2024 Corn Ferry Tour until the third reshuffle, while the remaining 40 golfers and ties will be subject to the second reshuffle. Now, it doesn't talk about PGA Tour Americas, so there might be some relief there. And I think, you know, especially as it relates to George Kneiser, who was exempt to the second stage because of his status on the money list in PGA Tour Canada last year, I think he'll get starts on PGA Tour Americas, especially if he chooses to go to the South America leg to start the year. And so I believe Thomas Longbella now gets to play for a much higher prize. Harrison Ott, who missed at the second stage last week, will also, I think, get a number of starts on that PGA Tour Americas series. And, you know, getting back to the second stage through that isn't a bad deal. You're making a little money, not as much money as you make if we get to the Corn Ferry Tour, but for sure the PGA Tour. So it's the game within a game, Gary. They've been playing it for years, and it's all about making enough money to basically, you know, tell yourself, I can still do this. I can still keep trying. You know, we've looked at guys like Jim Schumann, you know, the teaching professional now at Blue Mountain Golf and Country Club. Neil Johnson from River Falls, former state amateur player of the year. They did it well into their 30s. Wouldn't advocate that for everybody, but if you have the game and you have the finances to at least pay for Q school, you can get it done. Now, Neil Johnson won the Colorado Open a few years back and got $100,000, you know, first prize, which really helped bankroll a couple more years of trying. But, you know, we sit here and see these guys as they're winning everything on the way up, and you think, boy, they can't miss. It was a lot easier to predict can't misses back in the Stricker, Kelly, Hayes, and Kendall era than it is today.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that, Rob, because as good as these guys are, you know, there's 1,000 more like them around the country trying to do the same thing. And Tom Fungbella, his goal now has to be top 40 at that final stage, because that gets him a bunch of starts on the Corn Ferry Tour. And if he does well, he gets through the reshuffles, and who knows what can happen from there. So I'm sure his goal now is that cracking that top 40 in the final stage.
And of course, he saw a former golfer, Eric Van Rooyen, win with another former golfer, Alex Goggard, on the bag here in the fall series. And so there is a blueprint for a lot of golfers from Minnesota, a lot of golfers from the Big Ten doing well on that circuit. This week, down here in Scottsdale at TPC Scottsdale on the, I believe it's the Champions Course, not the Stadium Course. It is the final stage of PGA Tour Champions Qualifying School. The top five golfers there will get through to and have full exempt status on the PGA Tour Champions, which is why Mario Tiziani, who has solid status for next year, Gary, is in the field trying to get to a higher exemption category to perhaps stave off any potential that he'd have to go to a Monday qualifier in 2024 for any event. And then, of course, Mick Smith, the teaching pro from Summit, Wisconsin, got through the first stage of Q school and now is right on to the final stage. And he will be trying to make some magic happen. It'll be interesting to see how these two guys, with their, you know, coming at it from two different directions, you know, how they handle the pressures of this qualifying school, which, quite frankly, and now it's a lot like the PGA Tour qualifying school, since there's only five spots there, too. You know, it's basically, you know, you're rolling the dice trying to get in that top five and kind of win the lottery. But if you don't win the lottery, at least you get a seat at the Monday qualifiers, which a lot of golfers, you know, such as Ken Tanigawa, Brian Cooper, Mario Tiziani lately have gotten quite good at getting through those to get into the main draws and then make some money and improve your status. So a lot to play for this week here in Scottsdale.
Yeah, huge opportunity for Mick, who, you know, played in the qualified and played in the U.S. Senior Open at Century World. Probably didn't shoot the scores he was hoping to shoot, but a great experience teeing it up with the best players in the world over speed 50. And then also qualified for the Senior Club Professional National Championship for the KitchenAid Senior PGA Championship next year in Michigan, where Steve Stricker will be defending champion. So those kind of experiences are invaluable for a guy who, you know, he's got a lot of tournament experience. Certainly he had a lot in Australia coming up through the junior ranks. He was one of the top young players in Australia years ago. And then, you know, he's really done well in our state, in our section. But it's a different story when you get to the level that he's trying to get to. And so those experiences he's had, especially at the Senior Open, I think are going to prove to be invaluable for Mick.
So we'll monitor that. I'm hoping to get out there Friday if those guys are in the hunt for status and check that out. I do have a bone to pick, though, with PGA Tour champions, Gary. And, you know, I've kind of, you know, I've seen it from time to time with the varying levels of respect that Jerry Kelly gets. I think they take pretty good care of him on social media, I'll say that. But, you know, when it comes to the banners, the wraparound signs and all that stuff that are on the grounds, you know, it's usually the Padre Harringtons and the Miguel Angel Jimenezes and the Longers that they get that treatment. But now they're starting to overlook our guy Mario Tiziani. The PGA Tour champions posted 10 players to watch at the final stage this week. And I'm going to go through the list quickly, and then we can talk about a couple of them. Ho Sung Choi, Chris Riley, Greg Chalmers, Boo Weekly, John Smoltz, Nota Begay III, Ted Purdy, Mike Small, Fran Quinn, and Omar Uresti. To me, not a lot of thought went into that list. There's a lot of names on that list, Gary, that I've seen a lot of attention shoveled on over the years. And Mario Tiziani has you know, kind of picked himself up by the bootstraps, you know, went back to, got amateur standing after, you know, trying to make it on the PGA Tour, and I think getting out there for a year, and then has come back and now tried on the Champions Tour, and played well enough to get that middle range status. The top 40 guys, which was the field, or sorry, the top 32 golfers, or 34 that made it to the Charles Schwab Cup Finals, they get full exempt status. They don't have to worry about anything. Mario just missed that by about six spots, so he's pretty solid. I think he's 42 or something on the on that final 2023 list. But you know, I kind of think that it wouldn't hurt to you know recognize the fact that this guy's come a long way in a short period of time.
Yeah, for a guy who didn't play much competitive golf or almost no competitive golf for a decade or more, and then to do what he's done. You know, first started to win some state senior opens. He went in Minnesota and he went on our Wisconsin State Senior Open. And then to do what he's done, basically without much status, you know, to climb up the ranks and climb up the Schwab Cup points list. He made 20 starts last year and played really well. Would have been nice to throw Mario a bone and mention him in the players to watch. You know, I can see some of the other players, certainly why they're on that list. Chris Riley was one of the best junior players coming in the country, coming up with in the Tiger Woods era, and, you know, was probably Tiger's biggest rival when they were teens. And I think Chris played on a Ryder Cup team early in his career and then sort of fell off. Omar Yuresti, that guy's played in everything for the last, you know, 30 or 40 years.
Yeah.
So you've got some names that people would recognize, but certainly Mario belongs in on that list, I think.
And I didn't realize Ho Sung Choi is 50 years old. He turned 50 on September 23rd. And I do enjoy looking at the list of guys who are turning 50. I don't begrudge them. We haven't heard about them previous to this. And Ho Sung Choi, of course, the unique follow-through, which he lifts his right leg upon impact, followed by a 90-degree counterclockwise spin, is described by the PGA Tour champions right up on him. Now, he turned 50 on the 23rd of September and advanced to the first stage in California last week. So he would be entertaining, to say the least. Chris Riley trying to go the route of Mike Small, who's also on this list. Mike Small, the ultra-successful golf coach at the University of Illinois. And Chris Riley now coaching golf at the University of San Diego. And he's been doing that since 2017. But he hasn't had a PGA Tour start since 2016. He played 346 times, you know, and I, you know, I've seen him on some of the golf coverage, and I think he's still – you know, in the kind of shape like Mario Tiziani, where he can make an impact on the tour. Greg Chalmers turned 50 on October 11th, the journeyman from Australia, and very popular on the platform formerly known as Twitter. Boo Weekly will be a fun one. He turned 50 right after the AmFam Championship, right after the U.S. Senior Open on July 23rd, made eight starts. Best finish was a T20 at the SAS Championship, so he'll be good. We've seen John Smoltz, you know, I think it's an accomplishment that he made it through the first stage in Florida to get to the final stage. That's progress. Noda Begay, known as the former Stanford teammate at Tiger Woods, also runs a very successful junior tour, where Tiger caddied for son Charlie just a few weeks ago. And Ted Purdy is on that list, Gary. And, of course, Ted Purdy was the longtime AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am partner of one Herb Kohler, and had a long-time sponsorship agreement with the Kohler Company. So I think there'll be a lot of fans in Sheboygan County pulling for Ted Purdy.
Yeah, for sure. And you know what's really scary, Rob, is thinking about this in 2 years, that that list of players to watch will include Mark Wilson. Although, what would be his exemption category, you know, as a five-time winner? Would he have to go through a Q school? I don't think he would have to.
I think there's and again, this is where, you know, as complicated as the PGA Tour qualifying criteria is, this is why Mario Tiziani is going to the, you know, to the Q school, is because the more exemption categories you're in, the more, you know, times that you might be called on that one versus the one that you think is solid. I think there's a 1 year past champions exemption category. So guys like Robert Gomez, when he turned 50, was able to use that. Now, he didn't play very well. So, you know, guys use that much like, I guess, like the PGA Tour U now, with where you get a certain number of starts on, you know, either the PGA Tour or the Korn Ferry Tour or the Americas to try to, you know, to try to get your status out there. So he'll get some starts, on that category. And, again, you would think that he would get, you know, especially the AmFam Championship, and some of the, the Sanford International, the Cologuard, which is sponsored by a Wisconsin company, Exact Sciences, that he would get some love there. So I think Mark will be okay. And, you know, there's that component that he, battled Tiger Woods in the finals of a U.S. Junior back in the day. And everyone thinks that Tiger Woods will be, you know, the first one in a golf cart on the PGA Tour champions, once he turns 50 as well. And, I think it's a positive sign, you know, that, in the coverage of, the Hero World Challenge this week, that, you know, that he, you know, talked about playing maybe once a month in 2024. And that would be progress. You know, we hadn't seen him since the Masters in April, and, you know, he was able to play 72 holes, looked better near the end than he did at the start. And, you know, that's always a positive sign. As long as he doesn't get too good on the PGA Tour again, I would expect to see maybe him, in that mix too. When, and that would turn this tour on its heels, wouldn't it?
Oh my goodness. Yeah. You know, a tour that, sometimes doesn't get enough love would have a ton of eyeballs on it that aren't normally on it. If Tiger starts playing a little bit, even if he plays just occasionally the majors and maybe a couple other tournaments on the Champions Tour, it would be a huge, huge boost in publicity for that tour.
Absolutely. So, you know, there's all-time money lists. So category, I'm not sure which category this is, a maximum of two members age 50 until their 51st birthday who have won at least four PGA Tour tournaments awarding official victory status. So that would also, and that's ahead of the top five players from the qualifying school. So there's, you know, right. You know, that gets you pretty good, percentage of, the tournaments, even in that 78 player field. Then of course, you know, you're probably pretty good for the major championships too, like the senior PGA and the U.S. Senior Open.
I would think so. Yeah. Yeah, Mark, you know, Mark, when you look at his body of work, he's overlooked, I think, Rob, you know, a five-time winner. There aren't, you know, it's a pretty short list of guys, even in PGA Tour history, who have won five times. Mark's on that list. And I once talked to him about that. I think I ran into him at a PGA show in Orlando a few years back. And I said, Mark, you know, you're a five-time winner. And he said, yeah, but there's a lot of five-time winners. And not really, when you think about it, when you look at the list of how many guys have won five times or more. I don't know exactly how many, but it's a very short list, and he's on it.
Well, I think you go back to Jerry Kelly, won three times on the PGA Tour.
Yeah.
And look at the career he's fashioned for himself. The one thing about Jerry Kelly, though, is he's never stopped working on his game. And in his bulldog mentality, I think, you know, has really paid off here on the Champions Tour, where, you know, he believed that he could be among the best. He kept his body in shape to be among the best. And, you know, he's been in the top 10, top 15 in the Schwab Cup standings every year since he's come out. And, you and I have seen Mark Wilson. He was at the AmFam Championship, I believe, again this year with the Golf Channel. And, he's the same Mark Wilson that he was when he came out of college he's small in stature, but boy, he's very good at what he does.
Yeah, he's got a very, very high golf IQ. Doesn't beat himself. You know, he's not a guy that's going to go out and shoot a bunch of 63s, but he's going to shoot a bunch of 69s and 70s and be right there. And he looks, you know, other than a little graying at the temples, maybe he looks just like he looked, you know, 20 years ago to me.
On the topic of Tiger, what did you think of the Hero World Challenge and what you saw of him?
You know, I didn't get to watch a lot, but I followed it and I read a lot on social media and I read some stories from the golf magazines, and sounds like he was, you know, naturally rusty. And I read a couple guys said that he walked without a limp, but in the little bit that I saw, Rob, I did see a limp there, a little bit of a limp. But he's saying, most importantly, that the ankle is pain-free, which I think is huge. He's changed his swing a little bit, it looks like to me. It's a little shorter. And he might not push off that right leg as hard and violently as he did in his prime, but I thought he played pretty well, and I think it's a harbinger of things to come. He's only, if he gets a chance to work on his game a little bit, you know, with all the injuries he's had, it's going to be really cool to see what he does, especially at the Masters, I think.
I thought the positive sign was he made 5 birdies a day the final 3 days. He made 4 on opening day, but then had a really tough finish with a finished double bogey, bogey, bogey par, and shot 75. You know, obviously that's not going to get it done. So, you know, these days 5 birdies a day doesn't necessarily get it done, but at least it shows that that game is still there. And they did show Gary at one point a comparison of his swing from 2013 to now. And it looked like there was kind of a more of a combination push off with both feet, both legs back in 2013. And now it looks like it's a more conventional you and me type approach where it's a right leg weight transfer to the left leg. And, you know, they also showed a clip of the sound of his club as it struck the ball and the sound that it makes as it's going through. And that hasn't changed. The swish of that noise is still, he's generating good clubhead speed, in my opinion, and making that same sound. But, you know, I don't know if he's getting maybe quite the distance he got, but, you know, he's good enough, I think, to overcome that. So we'll see. He'll be in the PNC Championship in a couple weeks, along with, his son Charlie. Of course, Steve Stricker and Izzy Stricker will be in that. And then, prelude to that for Steve Stricker, Gary, is this week's PGA Tour Champions. I'm sorry, the Champions Cup, right? What are we calling this?
I think it's the World Champions Cup.
There we go, the World Champions Cup. What are we? I saw that they announced how the format, and it was a little bit foreign to me.
Yeah, I glanced through the news release that the PGA Tour Champions put out about what the format will be and how points will be scored and allotted. And I've got to admit, Rob, I've got to read a little closer to really understand it. I think it's a little bit confusing. And we'll post the story to Wisconsin.golf before that tournament starts, just kind of explaining what to look for, what to watch for, and how this thing's going to be scored. But great to have on a 6-man U.S. team, 1/3 of the team is made up of Wisconsin guys in Stricker and Kelly.
So, and as Gary said, we'll post this. The thing that got me though, they called it something though. It was like a Scotch. What was that? Scotch Sixums I've never heard of this. Scotch Sixums is a modified alternate shot format used in team competition where each player hits a tee shot. Then the team selects one tee shot to play from there. Now, that's the format we use on the second day of the Minnesota mixed team that I play with my daughter every year. They call it a modified alternate shot. But I guess this is – so I guess there'll be no closeouts. All 9 holes of the competition will be played in each match. So I guess what they're doing, Gary, is because there's 3 teams, that this is a format they can use to post a score on every hole. And then I guess, the winner of that hole gets 2 points, second place gets a point, and third place gets nothing, I believe, or a half a point.
Okay.
So, and then that's how this aggregate point thing works, and which is why you can string it out over 4 days. I hope it works. I think it's going to be fun. And it's great that Steve Stricker, Jerry Kelly are in this, and it'll be Thursday through Sunday with coverage, I believe, on Golf Channel. Whenever a team finishes with the same score in a hole, those teams will be awarded the same number of points. So, yeah, it's going to be an education for all of us. Maybe it's a format we can use some year if we ever go back to that Illinois, Wisconsin, Iowa competition that we used to do down at Eagle Ridge, maybe we could do the Scotch Sixums.
Well, I'm torn whether this is going to be purely entertainment or cutthroat competitiveness or sort of a cross between the two. But I know one thing. Kelly loves team golf, and he probably rues the fact that he didn't get to play a lot of it, didn't really play on a Ryder Cup team, although I think he qualified for that one that was postponed during 9/11. But he loves this kind of stuff, and I think he's going to it's going to be fun to watch what he does in this competition.
It sure will. So it's the World Champions Cup this weekend, PNC Championship next weekend. So our month of December, not void of golf. Also, I should mention, too, Pearson Hunt has been invited back to the Patriot All-America here at the Wigwam Resort at the end of the month. It'll be his third or fourth year competing in that. So wow. Another feather in the cap for Pearson Hunt there. And then, of course, the final stage of PGA Tour Q School. I don't know if I mentioned that earlier, Gary, but that'll be coming up at the TPC Sawgrass down in Florida, the Valley course, not the Champions course, December 14th through the 17th. And they'll also play at the alternate site Sawgrass Country Club in Ponte Vedra Beach. So should be good weather down there for that. And we'll see if Thomas Longbella can get through. Talking Dot Golf, sponsored by Old Fashioned Golf. Our friends at Old Fashioned Golf are creating Wisconsin-inspired golf apparel right in Green Bay, Wisconsin. All their gear, extremely comfortable, with one-of-a-kind designs that allow you to show your love for this great state, both on and off the golf course. All these designs, the I-43, the and the my favorite, the Polka State with the outline of Wisconsin, the Icon with the brandy old-fashioned glasses, the beer cans, the slices of cheese, all that stuff available at Old Fashioned Golf. So check them out at oldfashionedgolf.com. Gary D'Amato, also available at Old Fashioned Golf, is custom orders. And a number of high school golfers you might see in Old Fashioned Golf apparel, because Kyle telling me that they've partnered with a number of high schools and colleges in the state of Wisconsin and beyond the border, for that matter, where they do custom logo work on polos and other, you know, pieces of apparel. And so some of these golfers that we're writing about in the high school rankings may be walking around in old-fashioned golf apparel. And I use that as the segue to the fact that we are about halfway through, as of this morning, actually three-quarters of the way through, the annual class-by-class high school rankings. Today it was the boys' class of 2025. Gary D'Amato, it's Kian Beistel Flores of Cambridge, the Division III high school state champion, who's at the top by a little bit over Lincoln Hopman of DeForest. Lincoln qualified for both the State Am and the State Open, missed the cut there. Kian, I think I'm pronouncing that right, might be Kian, Beistel Flores of Cambridge, had a really good, he won the college showcase, and a kid, you know, with a real solid build. Reminds me a lot of Michael Addy, who came through a couple years ago from Sussex Hamilton. And so we've got that class up. We'll have the 2024 girls on Wednesday, and if I'm able to pull it together by Friday, the 2024 boys. I'll say this about 2025, Gary. What did I did the math yesterday, and there's 9 tournaments that we use that are multi-day events in the state of Wisconsin in judging this class. The top 40 golfers in today's rankings combined to play in made 140 starts in those 9 tournaments. So depending on how you do the math, you know, bottom line is they were probably the most well-represented class of any that we've ranked, including the ones coming up here on Friday on the boys' side. So, you know, we haven't talked much about 2025. We've talked a lot about how good 2024 was on both the boys' and girls' side, but especially for the boys' 2025 class, they're challenging one another. And I think with Beistel Flores and Hopman leading the way, it's, you know, I think it's going to be a very competitive class. Now, Sam Swavely out of Hudson, who was number one the first 2 years, didn't have quite the performance year, but we saw him everywhere, caddying for his brother Bennett and playing in a lot of stuff that Bennett was playing in. I know Sam played in the Ray Fisher, you know, tournament down in Janesville. But so even though Sam slipped, it's not an indictment on his year as much as it is. There's a lot of kids in this class that are starting to really catch their competitive fire, so to speak, and they're moving up. It was actually tough to cap this class at 40, which is not a problem we usually have. Usually we have to, you know, dig up the last 5 or 6 golfers. So pretty good indictment of what we've got coming here in 2025. And Gary, one quick story. Lincoln Hopman qualified for the State Am. He won a 3-for-2 playoff at Lake Wisconsin Country Club. The other guy who got through that day, our friend JT Johnson, the Monona native and the Wisconsin State senior match play champion. And yep. I bring that up only because, in that playoff, and I'm not sure if JT and Lincoln played together during the rest of the round, but in the playoff, JT was really impressed with Lincoln's maturity and sportsmanship. And so when they showed up at Aaron Hills, JT made for him an alignment stick with the DeForest school colors, purple and gold. Now, of course, JT would know that because he went to, I believe he went to Monona Grove High School. He grew up in Monona. So he's familiar with, right now, I think they're all in the same conference, but really nice gesture. And I think the moral to the story that Lincoln was trying to tell me was that, you know, when you play in state AMs and state opens and you're a 15 or 16 year old kid, you know, you meet people that you haven't met before and you meet people with a lot of experience. And if you bring a, you know, a good pair of ears and listen to what they have to say and engage these other golfers that have played for a lot longer than you have, there's far more to be gained by entering and trying to qualify for a state AM and a state open than whatever score you shoot this year at Aaron Hills and Century World. And I thought that was a pretty cool story, but not surprising knowing what we know about JT Johnson.
Yeah, very gregarious guy, outgoing personality. And you're right, Rob, you know, for young kids to be paired with players who have been around, you know, 20, 30, 40 years is, and what's great is those guys almost to a person are very willing to share advice, knowledge, from their many years, their successes and failures over the years. And most of those players are more than willing to impart that stuff on junior players, which is great to see. You don't see that in a lot of other sports.
And the other thing that was neat, since we talked about the rankings in our last podcast, our class of 2025 girls, number one, was Daniela Honkamp. So she would be a junior this year at Whitefish Bay High School. A year ago, when I was, you know, doing the analysis of her class, she played in the WPGA Junior and qualified for the state high school championship. But those were the only two multi-day events she played. And I made note of that. I said if she had played more, she might have been higher in the rankings because her performance in the regular events, the one-day events that are good to kind of get, you know, cut your competitive teeth are nice, and she played really well. But if she'd played more, it probably would have moved her up because that's kind of what college coaches are looking for. And then in her subsequent research, as she started the recruiting process, she saw that. So she entered a whole bunch of two-day tournaments this year, played better than anybody else in her class in those, and jumped past McKenna Lowe into first place, the top spot in the 2025 girls rankings. So, you know, again, you know, these rankings are very arbitrary, as we've talked about before on Talking.Golf, and as I've written about when we've written about them. You know, they're based on my analysis of these kids' perceived impact at the next level based on their performance in the last 12 months. And there's a lot of factors that go into it that just don't take into account where you finish, in a given tournament. It's a lot of it's where you finish in relation to kids in your class, and the consistency of the finishes. And, trust me, and as I spent almost my entire Sunday leading up to the Packer game, Gary, trying to figure out this class of 2024 boys, because among the top five golfers, especially the top three, everyone won an event. Everybody went low in event. Everybody showed that they can, that they, you know, they went lower in round two than round one, which is another key component to college golf. Coaches are looking for resiliency. And, and then, you know, you had situations where they, again, like Lincoln Hotman, tried to qualify for state AMs and state opens, and a couple made it, a couple didn't. And, you know, how does that factor in when a kid dominates at the junior level but can't quite get to the state AM and state open, yet, you know, maybe a couple other kids do. So we're trying to sort that out. And it's a good problem to have. I mean, it, you know, if I'm a college coach in Wisconsin, I'm loving what the junior PGA Tour, the regional tours, a lot of these kids going to play Hurricane Tour events. Jessica Geiser's mom told me there were several Wisconsin kids in the Hurricane event down in Florida yesterday. We'll try to find those results. But I don't think we've seen a landscape as competitively active, Gary, as we've seen at the junior level, but we're starting to see that at every level now because all these tournament fields are so full. We've had record number of people try to qualify this year for the state AM, state open. I expect that, you know, while it may not be to that level next year, because this year it was, you know, Aaron Hills and Century World, you know, next year isn't that bad with Merrill Hills and Monaco Country Club. I mean, two great courses, but the experience of playing in those tournaments is second to none.
Oh, absolutely, Robin. You know, no ranking system is perfect, but I mean, the care and the concern and the passion that you put into this is obvious. I know it gets some great viewership numbers on our website. And, I think a telling thing that how fair you are with this is that you've received very, very few complaints over the years from parents who thought that their kids should be ranked higher or whatever. I think that's a really good point, and it really goes to show how much thought you put into this.
And there was one situation though. It was 2026 boys. Let me go down to that ranking, and I don't know how I missed it. Well, I know how I missed it. So the WSGA Junior uses Blue Golf, but unlike the WPGA Junior Tour, doesn't list the classes. So I've got my list of names on one side, and I'm looking at the results from the WSGA Junior boys on the other, and I'm trying to see, you know, I missed one, and it was Peyton Albers of Wanakee, and he finished like T6. So, and that was that, you know, that you covered the junior, Gary, that was where they all went low this year. And and so he had a really good a good junior, and I didn't factor that into the rankings. So he basically switched spots with Reese Van Ruden of Middleton, and went up to number 4, and Reese to number 6 around Cody Getzky, who, you know, we talked about in our last podcast, was a real, you know, I mean, the kid made the cut at the state open, Gary, at age 14. I mean, that's incredible. At age 16, I think he is now. And that's incredible. He's been in the national, you know, drive, chip and putt finals, but, you know, I'd like to see him, you know, I don't tell anybody how to schedule their kids. Just right. Like, I don't, you know, I'm very respectful of the fact that not a lot of people say I'm doing this wrong. But, you know, Jessica Geiser's done a great thing by coming back every year to play in the PGA Junior Championship at Dretzky and Brown Deer, because now, you know, it started out as being her, you know, a 36 hole tournament to get her better. Now it's a 36 hole qualifier to get to the National Junior PGA Championship. Be great if those kids that go away for school with the purpose of trying to, you know, get themselves ready for golf would kind of build a summer schedule around that. I get it doesn't always work. And I know this year Cody had a great tournament, a very time honored tournament down in Georgia, I think, that he played in. So, there's a lot of stuff that goes into it. But I think Cody knows that you and I, we saw him at Central World this summer, not only respect his game, Gary, but you and I saw Cody Getzky after he was done playing on multiple days out watching some of the golf, watching other golfers, especially late in the tournament there, I think on Thursday, or on Wednesday, the final, the 36 hole final day, you know, where, you know, he got done, went out and watched. I think this kid's going to be, and that's why he's going to IMG. I mean, I think, you know, his family recognizes the kid's got talent. We're going to go down there, let him play year round and see where it takes him. And so he'll always be from Heartland, Wisconsin. So we'll always, be following what he does. But, in this whole complicated metrics of emphasis on high school golf in Wisconsin, high school tournaments in Wisconsin, we're trying to figure out and let people know where those kids rate. And, you know, Cody Getzky's, recruitment will take care of itself. He's got the talent. He's got a state open made cut on his resume, which is one more than the two guys in this podcast combined.
Yeah, a high achieving family too, Rob. I saw that his older brother just graduated West Point this year.
Wow.
So, there's some good genes in that family for sure. I would encourage all our listeners to go to our website and follow Rob's series. It's really excellent, and you'll learn a lot about the top young players in our state.
We've got that. We've got player of the year stories. I've got one to go. I'm trying to get the girls junior player of the year story, and then we'll be done with that. And boy, by that point, Gary, it'll be done with 2023.
And not a moment too soon, right, Rob?
And not a moment too soon, exactly. Well, Gary, appreciate the time here on Talking.Golf. We'll chat again next week.
All right, sounds good, Rob. Thanks.
Talking.Golf is sponsored by Old Fashioned Golf. Our friends at Old Fashioned Golf are creating Wisconsin-inspired golf apparel right in Green Bay, Wisconsin. All of their gear is extremely comfortable with one-of-a-kind designs that allow you to show your love for this great state both on and off the golf course. And take it from me, Rob Hernandez, and Gary D'Amato. We wear our old-fashioned golf polos, fleece, and hats, not only out on the golf course, but out to dinner, and everybody knows where we're from because it's all about Wisconsin at old-fashioned golf. So check them out at oldfashionedgolf.com. For Gary, I'm Rob. We'll talk golf again next week.